This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Keep it real short.
Yeah, keep it quick, and we're going to go back
great.
Around.
Yeah, my name is Ivan. I am a dentist by training. I do ed tech for dentists, and we're actually moving to our medical to provide a medical device for them as well.
That's awesome.
In the Central Valley.
Central Valley, very nice.
My name is David Moeller. I'm a serial entrepreneur. Current startup is smart device company.
Smart device company. How long have you been doing it?
For 3 years.
Nice. And where are you based?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Very nice.
How's it going?
Good
Brian
to see you.
Donald, YMAC Capital, mortgage broker with a B2B model in the Bay Area.
You met Russell a few months back.
Yes, I remember. I remember. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. Billy Richardson. I'm in the restaurant business in Las Vegas.
Very nice.
Four little restaurants. Growing my brands up.
How long have you been doing it?
12 years.
Good for you. All in Vegas the whole time?
All in Vegas. Well, and then we had 10 outside and then COVID.
Yeah, of course.
Lockdowns.
Tough. Yep. Pleasure.
Thank you.
Ian Matthews from Washington, D.C. And I'm here with David. We same company.
Very nice.
So building on what he said, smart devices. We're in the car security business, so it's a connected car alarm.
Understood. Real pleasure.
Gary Paul Ribillo. Long time.
Yes, yeah, long time, brother.
Yeah, so I think 2009.
Yeah, really good to see you.
Yeah, so three-time founder, mm-hmm. all in the investment space, and want to build something else there. And then I have a bunch of URLs that I've been acquiring that I want to talk to you about.
I love it. I love it.
Monique Brown. I run an organization that teaches life skills. I also work in film and television production, a little real estate investment, and brand development for my husband's legendary career and film entertainment life.
It's awesome. It's great to see you again.
Great. Thank you.
Great. Anybody else, Joe?
Nope, that's it.
Good. We got a nice small group, and we can go very deep today, so let's take advantage of that. So let's go back around, and this is the time to get very selfish and be very direct with your question. I'm sure some people will pick up nuances on it.
Okay, you want me to go first?
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'll try to keep it concise.
We've got some time.
I've got three questions mm-hmm. for you. Just a little bit of backstory on myself. I was very much like you as a kid, you know, hustler, immigrant parents, kind of a hard struggle there.
Yep.
I ended up going to dental school. I got some really niche training in my field, which was great, but I graduated with about $800,000 in student debt, which is crazy, but it's normal in that.
I know it is.
I was, you know, getting ready to come out and pay that debt and crush it. My daughter was born with a life-threatening condition, and so I couldn't really do that as a dentist, so I found another way, published a book, sold thousands of copies, and that turned into an online brand, which is now like my ed tech business, which does better than I would have done if I would have done just regular clinical dentistry.
Good for you.
So I built a team around it, and now we're expanding to a private label medical device as well. So I got a little nice little business model, taking some big steps in that. So. Anyway, my first question is, I'm basically the bottleneck in my content creation.
Mm-hmm.
To create like the pillar hero content, I gotta be in there doing surgery or something and teaching something around that content. It's hard for me to constantly create that content as the business owner. I'm trying to outsource that to other collaborators, but kind of having a hard time getting them to feed that funnel.
Other collaborators as in other people executing the actual surgery?
Yes, getting other influencers or people doing surgery, feeding me that content so we can just repurpose it as a team and turn that into 20 pieces of content. Having a hard time feeding that funnel.
Why?
Because these guys already make $500,000 a year. They don't really need me paying them $1,000 for their content. They
of course.
Do it on, you know, as charity, basically. So I want, how do I get them to buy into that? Or how do I feed the content funnel?
There's a lot of things there. So. Let's talk about the pillar content and the funnel. Is the model that, you know, obviously I'm very proud of really working for you, like macro, hero, chop it down, make that into content that's performing against the business KPI, is that working?
It does well when I can feed it. I can feed it myself.
How many times are you refurbishing it?
Adding new content?
No, refurbishing the original content. So the repurposing thing is a very important combo because as most of you probably know, so much of my world from a brand building standpoint is predicated on that, and so much of that is predicated on me being filmed doing stuff. And that completely got eliminated 18 months ago. I wasn't flying, I wasn't doing this in person. So what ended up happening is at first we did a lot of stuff through Zoom and things of that nature, but that obviously is a very one-dimensional visual creative. There's only so many times you could see me with in a t-shirt back, you know, and the context matters and in feed it matters. So what ended up happening when I analyzed the last 18 months, I was thinking about on the flight out here, ironically, because I saw a piece of content do extremely well from 3 years ago in the last 24 hours, is, wow, if D-Rock and I never film another thing, I've put enough film on paper, on wax, on YouTube, that if I remix it in perpetuity, I should be able to be effective with the evergreen content. One of the things most content creators don't take advantage enough of is the repurposing, truly understanding what that means. I'll give you an example. If you've got, I'm making some assumptions, so keep me in line here. If your content is you performing, when you're doing that, are you also looking to camera and teaching and like going through it?
Sometimes, yes.
So I'm sure you probably have seen this. One of the things you can do immediately is, how many would you say pillar pieces of content have you created?
Oh, a lot, 200.
Great. Yeah. So right off the top, there's probably an ungodly amount of content to be made where you're split screening, like I do, the original piece of content, and now you're just social commentating contextually on top of it with other variables, right? So to me, what's really interesting about the way I think about content, which I do think for every business here, from Vegas restaurants to yours to medical devices, you know, the whole world is predicated on communication, and does that create consideration to buy something? What is interesting about how I look at what I do and what I see working is my content is pretty evergreen. Literally, in my hotel, before I came here right now, I just produced a split screen from Daily V episode 22 from March 16, 2016, where the person's question was, how do you do what you do? And the two answers were empathy and gratitude. And here we are 5 years later, and it's like everything that I continue to say. And so I added a piece of content to it right now, and I'm pretty damn sure that, So here's this Q&A from Daily V 2022. My split screen, my additional context, went a little bit into gratitude, and this is all improv. In my hotel room, I took the cup of coffee that had a little coffee left, and I'm like, this is full. I'm grateful for this, what's in here, because I have more than most. And then when I sent it to the team, actually, this is why not show you. So in the WhatsApp thread where my team lives, where this was the original piece of content they sent me, because we're doing this, we have the same problem you do, right?
I'm keeping diaries of CEOs.
Okay. Right? So here's the question. This will now be a visual split screen. You see where I'm going? You've seen those from me.
I would say empathy.
Right? And so I'm answering.
And the second one, when yay hits rock bottom, what brings you back up? When you really hit it?
Gratitude.
Right? And so then I send them literally.
March 16, 2026. Shit's consistent out here, my friends. If you deploy these mental mindsets.
And at the end of this.
Into it, keep pushing.
And then what I sent to the team was, I want the title to say, you have more than most. What's interesting about that, what's interesting for everybody to say, so this is gonna be titled, you have more than most. I just split screened a piece 5 years later. I just realized I said 2026, so we'll have to make a joke of that in a post edit. This is a pretty substantially different piece of content that I'm gonna write copy to, that's gonna really focus on the gratitude part of the split screen, but I have to do this because I'm at the mercy of the pillar content production not being where it's at because we haven't started moving. If you've done 200 pieces of original pillar content, you probably have 4,000 pieces of micro content that can be brand or performance based as a funnel acquisition. So I think that's what you have to think about. I think the concept of the other thing to think through is, in a world of $500K, $100,000 framework that you created, they make $500K a year, they're doing this basically for charity. If you look at James is pillar content as something that extracts 57 pieces of creative for you, because you create post-production from it, it might put you in a position where you're willing to pay him $5,000 instead of $1,000. So I think the answer to the question is a much deeper thought of post-production, which you don't even have to be the pillar, the bottleneck of. I'm doing the split screens. You probably should as well, because it's much more impactful. But don't underestimate hiring an animator or other people where the split screen or the post creative content could be post-produced in animation or post-produced in video or overlay wording. So it's post-production.
So I realize I'm leaving a lot on the table by not repurposing that enough. Okay.
And what's fun is, where I was going earlier, I didn't finish the thought, I'm glad I remembered, is what I'm saying is evergreen. That's how I got to that 2016 thing. What I'm saying, I'll never change to the day I die. The slang term, the nuance to something that just happened. So I'm in the evergreen business, and then daily, you're using the context of your industry, of the moment. I mean, tomorrow, in a week in the World Series, a player may take a ball to the mouth and lose all his teeth, and that's a pop culture moment that might have you being able to over, which will lead to so much more relevance, right? He may make a video of a dish in his one of his restaurants 4 years ago, but something might happen in Vegas tomorrow that if you post-produce on top of it, the way I'm talking about. So it's really the remix. It's the DJing of the assets in perpetuity at scale, contextual to the distribution. So for example, to continue to layer on this for everybody, and I'm going deep on this because this is an answer for all of you. It's not only pop culture relevance like Cody Bellinger losing four teeth, and maybe you can figure out what to do with that. It's also distribution. The way I would talk if I knew that I'm posting this on LinkedIn to get clients is gonna be different than the way I would talk if I'm gonna put on TikTok. Two platforms that even 4 years ago weren't even in play. When we first met, it was just Twitter and Facebook, that's it. And so it's post-production not only for what's happening culturally or topical, it's post-production for the distribution too. Those 200 pieces of content, if they've mainly been posted inside of Facebook and Instagram, have they been done for pre-roll YouTube? Have we made them for TikTok? You may never need to do anything again. Right. You have enough work for the next 5 years in what we just talked about for the last 10 minutes.
Right, okay. Is it okay? I have two more questions.
Please.
Is that all right? So this one is going a little, it's a little different. So the medical device space and dental implants, they're all huge companies. They're all really, really big dogs. We're the underdog. I've had even CEO of one of them is tell me, you know, you better not enter the space. You're just going to wipe the floor with you, basically.
Yeah, that's usually the biggest reason I would enter a space.
So we're entering in for Christmas.
Yes.
That's when we launch and kind of do this David and Goliath type story.
Okay.
Right? I don't know how much to sass the big dogs because really I don't want, you know, I don't have as much funding as they do. How would you play that?
By really sassing them as much as possible.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you why. I've always, I've struggled with this because we have major clients at Vayner who are the number two in categories and they're petrified. And I'm like, you don't understand. You haven't sassed them or razzed them or poked them in 3 decades. So that's why you continue to be number two. The only way, you know, David beats Goliath is by going at it. What are they going to do? Like ultimately what's actually gonna happen is you're not important enough for them to actually spend the money and resources on it. But you poking them will give you micro market share growth.
So just go hard on it.
What are they gonna do? Talk it through. What are they gonna do? Sure. Out-market you? They're gonna out-market you anyway.
So the person in particular who said he's gonna crush us, basically, he's already started two implant companies, sold the first one 100 million, sold the second one 300 million. He said, you know, the next one we're gonna price lower than you. And I have the credibility, you don't. So you're basically...
The fact that he's even talking to you is already the most interesting thing to me. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that he even acknowledges you, I don't even... I would never spend a second on a company smaller than mine. That's the most interesting part of it all. It speaks to, in my opinion, irrational competitiveness or slash emotion, which could end up being the best thing for you. If you're a thorn in that person's side, he may end up referencing you more, which is gonna only help you. I'm fascinated by that. If somebody who's, you haven't entered in at all yet, and they've already had two exits of those size, and this is the third one, price is only just one variable. For example, this is where TikTok really matters. Price is one thing. Relevance always beats price. People pay more for things all the time if they think it's better or cooler or represents them more. Price doesn't scare me. What scares me is if David doesn't understand where the arbitrage is. How much is the implant?
So they're gonna price at 100, we're thinking at 130.
Yeah, I mean, I would be very aggressive on TikTok, very.
Okay. Yeah. My last question for you, Gary, just as a CEO, you gotta keep your pulse on a lot of shit.
Yep.
If you have family, personal mm-hmm. family crises mm-hmm. going on, such as my daughter's medical condition, it's when the shit hits the fan, basically, you still got a business to run and bills to pay. How do you think straight when you can't?
You don't. And I think the biggest thing I can tell you, my friend, is, you know, as somebody who has not had to live through a level of challenge of that level, I feel incredibly inappropriate to speak to it first. Second of all, what I've observed from others, the only thing I could tell you that feels incredibly natural to me is my number one goal in life is not to live with regret. I don't think there's a single person on earth who chose their business over their family that feels great about it when they get older. I think every moment you spend on your family situation at the expense of your business is a good moment to be spent.
Thank you.
You got it.
David.
Yeah, I'm gonna grab a prop.
Please.
Accelerate
that. I like a good prop.
Is what we're working on.
Please.
And it's a prototype, so everyone be gentle.
Yes.
So my background, I studied mechanical engineering at Georgia Tech, and then started down the corporate path and quickly realized that wasn't the best fit. Ian was my manager 20 years ago at GE.
I didn't fire him, if that's what you
mean. You didn't, probably should have. I also got shit against Goldman. Well, I interviewed with them. They were one of my investment banking interviews. A friend and I tried out for a reality TV show called American Inventor in between my first and second year at business school. I was at Harvard. And we actually made it. So this is called American Inventor. It was a precursor to Shark Tank. And long story short, we took this bicycle rack invention, licensed it to Whirlpool. We had a single patent, and they went and sold over 1 million units through distribution, through Lowe's, Home Depot.
That's awesome.
So I decided not to go into finance. Goldman made the right choice in not extending me an offer. They detected I would have quit or been fired, probably fired day one. So then started a cloud website backup company. I had a website crash, raised some money. Ian was an investor in that 10 years ago. We grew it to about 500,000 customers, 1 million websites backed up. Sold it for about 30 million, I don't know, 3 years ago.
Okay.
Around that time, I had my car broken into the third time.
Wow.
So just moved to a different part of Atlanta, what I thought was a really nice neighborhood. Had been in two prior neighborhoods, had my car broken into, and a neighbor's car was stolen. He left his key fob in the middle of his car. And so I just said, I'm gonna go on Amazon and find like ring for my car. I'm gonna go find this thing, uh-huh. buy it, and call it a day. So I searched, all I could find were like the club, old school car alarms, and
the club.
And like dash cams.
I forgot about the club.
But like legit,
yeah.
like, that's what was out
yeah.
there. And then one of the top
still
recommendations
still I believe it.
Was baby cams. So you take a baby cam, because it's close enough to your house, you could put it in the car and then see what's going on. And so I had an original idea, did a patentability search, and it came back free and clear, so started working on the product while I was...
I mean, that must be a holy grail scenario for someone with your kind of skill set, right? Like the fact that like you're living... like I think scratching your own itch is always the best start of a business.
Mm-hmm.
When you're lucky enough to be an engineer and you can actually make it, you know, for me, scratch my own itch, it, in this scenario, stops somewhere, which is I have no idea how to fucking make the thing. For you, that, I mean, that must have been a really fun moment,
well,
right?
There are parts of it I know how, like, there's a microwave sensor inside of this thing, and the hardware where there's like literally electrons bouncing around inside of this that allows you to detect someone outside of a car that is like, way over my head. So I've had to
sure.
learn painfully after
sure.
the software company how hard hardware
sure.
is. Part of what I was describing with the way we grew CodeGuard, we partnered with big hosting providers, CodeScaler and Bluehost, they'd add us to the checkout list.
Yep.
And there's your website back.
Yep.
With
that's how you got your acquisition.
That's how we got it, that's how we grew.
I got
the,
it.
The Claw, we sold through Big Box. So now, you know, I'm sitting through these sessions and my mind is just blown because the D2C and having an individual conversation with a single customer is it just feels very, very challenging.
Yeah, it's foreign to you. You've been in the B2B business.
Very, very foreign. And so we've raised $4 million to date. We've got 21 patents, 5 of those issued. We launched a TechCrunch Disrupt Battlefield a month ago. And right now we're growing our wait list and trying to potentially get some pre-orders. And we're thinking Indiegogo or Kickstarter in the next month. The next steps would be to
raise. I have a very wild idea for you, but keep going.
Next steps.
What is the product?
Oh, so this is a, it's hilarious. So this is, it goes in your cup holder.
That's what I thought.
And then you can still put a cup inside of it. It will detect if there's any motion outside of your car, and it will flash an LED ring and make a really loud chirping noise. And we call that deterrent mode.
Of course.
If they open the door, these PIR sensors will detect them, no false positives. It sounds 120 decibel blast, which is really, really, really loud. I don't have a good way to describe it.
Please.
An ambulance in your car.
An ambulance in your car.
Right, so step one, if it gets too close, it's going to show the person, like, you might want to pick the next car. Step two, if the car is super fancy, 10% of the time.
That people face, go ahead. People breaking in, so that's big now. And most people just walk around and pull up on door handles because people are leaving their car door unlocked, or they've left their fob inside of it. So they walk around, they pull it in, or actual theft, you know, taking off with your car. So when we looked at this, most devices fix one.
Got it. So I apologize. On the first scenario, you're talking about people just taking shit, not taking the car.
Taking shit, taking the laptop out of the battery.
Yeah, totally got it.
$1 billion worth of things are taken from cars every year. $1 billion worth. That's what's
reported. Where the car isn't even being taken. That's just being reported.
That's just being reported. And there's so much victim shaming around this.
Of course.
Because someone's car gets broken into and they're like, did you leave it unlocked?
Yeah, and just some people, like honestly, some people are in the place of like just realizing like, I'm not going to waste the time and report this to police. I'm going to go to Best Buy and buy whatever the fuck got your token.
Yeah. Absolutely. And if you do report to police, then they say, oh, you know, they don't have anything they can recommend. And so, like, my neighbor's car was stolen. The police came around. Mine had been rifled through. I had left it unlocked because I really like our neighborhood. I don't get home and get paranoid about how bad the neighborhood is. I just get home and shoot hoops with some of the kids in the street.
Yeah, of course.
So one of the things is it anchors. You twist it, it'll anchor. You install it yourself. You connect it to power. And then you have a fob or use your phone, so it'll arm automatically. And then it senses you when you walk up and disarms automatically. It'll record video if someone does enter the car, transmits it to the cloud.
It's really cool.
You can have professional monitoring like SimpliSafe that can view it on your back.
How much is the club?
$50 maybe?
It's like $60, yeah.
$60.
And how much will this be? You're not sure yet?
What do you think?
$50?
There are two groups. So we survey customers and there's customers who view like a $50 to $75 price point, and there's 200 plus.
Because they view it as an alarm system?
Alarm system, and then we have safety capabilities. So we can.
I assume you get more excited when people say 200.
Yeah. I do, but see, this is the thing too, is that I know when I bring out a prototype, there are pros and cons. And I'm not showing you the mobile app.
Of course.
So I know.
Yeah, to your point, I can project. No, that's exactly right.
It's tough.
By the way, you're 100% right. If you showed me first out of production line, and if you just do anything that Apple-fies it in the white box and shows the app and the screen, the justification of $199 versus $60 goes through the roof.
To answer that question,
and by the way, even the fact that, I'm sorry?
We were gonna start at $299.
That's understood. I understand.
And then we wanna have a lower end version down the road, similar to Nest model, where you start with a high end, Tesla model, start with a higher end.
There's, you know what's so uniquely fascinating about this from a consumer lens, and you'll probably want to spend a little time on this, is where does it become price prohibitive also matches the higher propensity for theft and breakthrough. So you're going to have to find that Mendoza line, because the people that don't have price friction at $299 are also less targeted, less feeling the pain, and so finding that right area is going to be, that's in this business hypothesis, that's going to be really fascinating.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be really interesting. My street in Atlanta, I think some neighborhoods are targeted more than others, because on my street, 3 Range Rovers have been stolen. One guy was at the mall, and someone
hopped in. Every city and state in the country has, there's always towns that begin to have a different income level connected to the town that does. I mean, it's just the most cliche story of them all.
So we think that price, I did a survey, I ran Google Ads and found that I interviewed 130 people and the split was really interesting.
Can I give you a much better way to do that?
Yes.
Because I love the way you just said that, because it's very smart.
Yeah.
before you do Indiegogo or the thing I'm about to throw at you, I would actually run a website that looks like it's actually functional. Design the whole thing. A, B, C, D test the pricing.
Yeah.
When they're done in the checkout, have a video of you two saying, thank you for doing this. This is actually pre-launch because we're trying to find the price.
Yeah.
Because you completed the whole order,
yeah,
you're gonna be one of our first 500 people that's gonna get a free one from us. See you soon.
Yeah, okay.
Because then you'll get real clean data. And I actually do think, specifically for this product, given that it's hardware, you gotta produce it, you gotta put it right, it's different than, than some of the stuff you've been involved in. Mm-hmm. I think it's worth going through that process because then you'll flat out see.
Yeah.
This will be not a survey where humans subconsciously know that you're analyzing their data.
Yeah.
This will be, I actually think I'm buying this. I bought it for $149, I bought it for $299, I bought it for, you'll get some very clean data. Something worth thinking about.
So
plus the marketing of like the authenticity, like getting a video from you guys at the checkout part when it's done, like, thanks, this is actually not ready yet. This is not even the real name of the product yet. This is not even the real price of the product yet. You, though, are gonna get this because you just went all the way through and bought it, so we're thankful. You're the one of the first 500 people to ever do that in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do this now. And in spring of 2022, we're gonna hand deliver you one to the address you put in here as a thank you for going all the way through. There's a lot that can happen there.
Yeah.
You'll get the data.
Mm-hmm.
You'll build a very small community of very loyal people that feel part of your community.
Yeah.
You might even get like some marketing and new coverage for your product because of how unique that idea is.
Yeah.
Where am I on timing? Okay, so let me sneak one quick thing on you and then we'll get back to it if I can. I think the new Indiegogo and GoFundMe is NFT projects. I wonder if you can get together with a artist and produce 1,000 tokens, 5,000 tokens of really cool car art where people buy it and that gives them maybe even a piece of the business. You gotta look at the SEC and like where all that is right now with the Jobs Act and all that. But I'm completely convinced that the future of fundraising is gonna come in NFT form, not in Indiegogo and GoFundMe, because people have a double asset play there. I actually think it's how every artist is gonna do album releases in the future. Instead of going to a record label, they're gonna have the fans be a part of it. So something to put on your radar.
Awesome.
Yeah, because if you get an artist, people have the collectible and some sort of incentive, and the NFT represents getting one of those.
Mm-hmm.
So you buy that, you get that. So you're, you know, now all of a sudden you're selling the NFT for $700 because it's a collectible and it's a cool piece of art, car. You're getting the $300 item. You're probably getting more money that way. And you can also, then you also have them part of your ecosystem. So we can expand on it later. I want to follow Joe's lead. Love your shirt, by the way.
Thank you.
Russell,
so we talked a few months ago.
Yes.
About how to locate CPAs and financial planners to work with me on my B2B mortgage.
Yes.
Program. And you talked about setting up
Facebook groups.
Mm-hmm. To
Sacramento Business Alliance, not, yep.
Yeah. And so I'm still working on the logistics there. I've been super busy on some other stuff since then.
No worries. But please do that. So like follow up with
Absolutely.
Joe or whoever. Like
and
it's
I'll ask Joe if I have any questions.
I'm really passionate about it. And at the time when we did that, that bit was hot on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm starting to get the feedback loop from people that I said it to individually or I mentioned it a couple times publicly on some podcasts. It's really working for people. And just to catch everybody up, the concept is if you're trying to do local business, Facebook groups are doing so well, especially in that 40 to 75 year old demo, that if you create something a little more evergreen, literally back to the prior one, the Atlanta Small Business Facebook group, Buckhead Small Business Group,
mm-hmm.
or like Denver Mom's Club, and if you're the host, you're the host. And if you can build up that group, you can do localized marketing inside of it.
Cool. I also want to start looking at ways to probably run some targeted ads on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Going after specific
yep.
companies that are the right size for what I want.
Yep.
Because what I really need is I need a practice where it's one guy in charge, and he may have some junior partners, or it may be, at the most, maybe three partners. Because when we get much bigger than that, it's hard to get the buy-in from everybody.
Makes a ton of sense based on what you're doing.
So for me to do that, do I actually target the companies or do I go after just this size of institution?
If it depends on what LinkedIn's gonna, you know, sometimes when it's too small, the targeting capabilities are not there.
Okay.
So you have to pay a little more for it to be a little more broad, but still get what you're looking for.
Okay. Do I run static ads or videos or?
Both.
Okay.
The, you know, the number one thing with social media ads that everybody misunderstands is it's the creative, not the media.
Okay. So try everything.
Because it's the only way you're gonna get your math right.
Okay.
The amount of people that just decide that Facebook ads don't work because they ran three ads, it's even back to the way we started today. Mm-hmm. It's like really squeezing the shit out of content. I mean, we're living it right now for WineTech. Quora is a thing that's really working for us.
You on Quora.
Yeah, I think all of you should look at Quora too. Answering questions and running ads against the questions, very effective. Quora does extremely well with Google search. It's not plain Google search. There's sometimes price arbitrage where a search term is like $19 on Google ads, but Quora is the first organic answer, and then you can buy the Quora ad for $4. So you see where I'm going with the arbs? Quora could be really, really good for a lot of people here. But where was I going? Now I remember. When I got off the plane today, I was talking to John Morgenstern, who used to be the head of all of VaynerMedia's planning of like what's the right strategy. I've now brought him in to just work with me directly. My brand, WineTech, VFriends, mainly because I think he'll be even smarter working on this because the clients don't let us do the best stuff. So he's almost working with me, but it's gonna make the org much smarter. And it's already happened in a week because he's the best of all time and he's like me, he loves to get his hands dirty. So like doing it again is fun for him. We're crushing Quora, but then there's fatigue. Like he hit me up right now and he was like, I need more answers to different questions because these three ads that are working are fatigued. So it's always gonna be more content. So in the LinkedIn example, it's like, even when something's working, you gotta do more. And most people only run one or two or three different variations of creative and call it a day and decide if a platform works when you're supposed to do hundreds of variations. Which is why I want everybody to do, for example, I would love for you to start a show to answer questions for those brokers so that you can then chop up the show and run them as ads.
Okay.
So like it's even another move above that, which is like, how are you gonna keep creating so much ads? Well, what if you actually had a Q&A show, which is really in essence answering, that's the whole point of why Q&A works. Ask Gary Vee was so brilliant because it's no different than Google Ads. Google Ads work because it's intent-based marketing. People are searching something, they want the answer. My Q&A show works because it's the temperament, Tea with Gary Vee, it works because that's the current temperament of what people want to know. One person usually represents 10,000 people's question.
That's a good point. So what I think I'm gonna do then is go to the independent guys I'm already working with who are doing the best at it and interview them.
Love that.
And then
That's a very good start. But again, if you start again, the Sacramento, you know, real estate brokerage, like very long tail groups, you can extract new people.
Sacramento Small Business Alliance.
That goes very broad. Sacramento brokerage, you know, mortgage broker or real estate agents is more narrow, but will be very specific. You can. Okay. Oh, by the way, the world's about and not or. You can start both those Facebook groups.
Cool. Appreciate it.
John Morgenstern's pumped. Let's go over here.
Billy Richardson. My family has been in Las Vegas since 1970.
I love it.
So
I love it.
Casino. My family, my dad started out small place, grew it. So I've always been in the hospital. It's always been a part of it. I've always watched him and how he grew.
Sure.
Three blackjack tables to 12 slot machines to growing it to where it was and selling it. So I got into the nightclub business early in Vegas. There was only three at the time, and I was one of them.
Wow.
Mine, 54, and the Rio, and watched all that, and then got out of that when it became big money, and
yeah, of course.
I couldn't afford
of course.
These buildings. So I got into the restaurant business in Vegas. My thing is, I grew up in Vegas, I'm very local in Vegas, I believe in local businesses in Vegas, and so when I go, and so I started with my first restaurant at Red Rock, it was a local place. I went in there, I knew the guys, and I just pretended I knew how to make hamburgers and do a hamburger restaurant, and I did everything and hired guys, and we didn't even have a restaurant, and we got our first one, and then the recession hit, Vegas. And so,
what year was that?
Pardon?
What year?
2000, so when I...
8, 9?
I worked at Wynn and left after that lunacy, but I learned a lot.
2008, 9?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I sat in the restaurant, we were doing really well, and watched the screen of the... If they were going to pass the one bill to give everyone money, and the stock market went through the roof, and they said no, and I just said, well, we're going to do
Lehman Brothers.
Business, and I watched the whole casino
yep.
empty out every day. But I got through it, and then we grew our business and grew our business. The thing I find hardest is going and dealing with now with these guys that are they're Wall Street guys, and all they understand is Guy Fieri, Thomas Keller,
sure.
Shake Shack. And I believe in Las Vegas. I love Las Vegas. I have my kids in Las Vegas. They're fourth generation. I'm third. But these buildings don't care about local guys anymore. They don't want local guys in there. They want guys that can pay big rents and stuff and
I know it's super well.
Yeah.
I know it's super well.
And I sit there and I go, you know what? I know I'm the best in this business in Vegas. I know the market better than anyone. I get out and I say it, but then I feel like, well, then I'm being cocky or I'm doing this. And
it's not that you're being cocky. It just doesn't mean anything to the people that have the real estate locations that you're referring to.
Right.
And nothing you say or do will change that.
Right.
But that's not a bad thing.
No.
That's only a bad thing if that's the fixation of what needs to happen.
Right. And I'm trying to learn about like social media and stuff like that. I've hired PR firms. I've done all that, and you know they tell me how great it is.
It's not gonna happen.
To do this and this and this. And I have one kid that works for me, and I've been doing this for. If I have one hamburger pitcher, I have 9 milkshakes. I've got one milkshake pitcher. From every season, Halloween doesn't change, Christmas doesn't change, but being here and you know, learning all this stuff, now I have a good tool of how to use social media. And I have two people that live in my house, a 15-year-old girl and a 10-year-old girl, and I bounce stuff off them all the time, and I get this. They're on their phones, and I go, what brands do you guys like? I don't know, Dad. Do you like Holstein? That's my hamburger place. Yeah, but Shake Shack's better, Dad. Okay.
No yeah, listen, you know, I get it too. I get it too.
I try to learn is that someone taught me that if I have a 15-year-olds now, in 5 years or 6 years, they're going to be 21, they're going to be coming to Vegas. How do I get them to become my customer? And then from 21
What is your business? So did you say you had four locations?
Four locations. So one is I do hamburgers and milkshakes mm-hmm. primarily, and then one is all pizzas.
Mm-hmm.
And then all hot dogs, and mm-hmm. then we do lobster rolls and hamburgers.
Okay.
So I specialize in
I see it.
Yeah.
And where are
Cosmopolitan, I'm in the resort world, I'm in
So you're in the places.
Traffic. Oh yeah, I'm in giant traffic areas. Like Holstein's.
That's massive.
Yeah. I'm trying to get locals to come down because Vegas has done these guys have done a really good job saying we don't want locals to come down. We're gonna charge for parking. Locals don't want to pay for parking.
Yeah, I mean as some you know, I have a real sense of this market. I almost bought the minor league baseball team with Tony Shea, who unfortunately passed. I was very involved in downtown mm-hmm. in the early days. I was really friendly with Tony at the time and yep. spent a lot of time analyzing the market because I was going to bet the farm on buying a minor league baseball team. here are my kind of couple concerns okay. or thoughts. One, I hate friction. Like fighting reality is always a losing formula in business. You know this way better than I do back to generation three. I learned this after 4 months of very good homework. Getting locals to come to your place is not mathematically right for them.
Right.
The fuck are they gonna do that for? One strategy you could have is actually opening a fifth location in a local place, building equity that way. And then when they do happen to go to the places, there's that residual brand affinity that is like a macro strategy to think about. Mm-hmm. The other thing to think about is how do you create differentiation inside those places? Mm-hmm. Forget about the famous chefs and things of that nature. The reality is that very concise marketing within the feeds of social can always work no matter what the circumstances are. So running very aggressive ads to the Vegas, you know, area code over and over and over is going to have residual effects. It's going to come down to the creative. But I think, let's break these down, because I assume the four locations you have, and I've got a sense of what you've got going on. That game is very real estate driven, like whatever location you have. Those patterns in those casinos are consistent, and you've got a pretty good sense of what that is. Rightfully so, as an entrepreneur, you're like, okay, so this is what it is, and my growth can come if I can get locals to come down.
Or just more people, or even just generating more in the United States and worldwide because of the people that are coming to Vegas.
Yeah, but it's not gonna work that way, no. I don't think, unless you do ridiculous shit, right? Like, the virality and consistency that you'll need for like me to see it on my TikTok and then remember in 9 months, like there's so much branding that has to go into that. To me, this starts to, so I would tell you what I would do. Okay. I think that if I'm your partner, I would say, we need to start at the product level. So let me give you an example, something I've always loved about this kind of food. I think you should create a $200 hot dog.
Oh, I have a billionaire burger.
It's $1 billion?
No.
Okay, what is it?
It's $100.
You're like,
it's got foie gras and trucks.
Yeah, so.
I am the only partner, and I have other people, and then they tell me, well, no one's gonna do it. And I have thought of saying, well, this burger's $1 billion and someone will buy it.
Yeah.
I see like the $1 million Sunday,
I think what you need to do is create multiple food items per place that are so outlandish and are content driven. So here's what I would do. I would create a $99 slice of pizza for the pizza place. I would think about what the fuck that means. Is that caviar? Is that some sort of like weird ostrich egg? Or am I pouring Dom P over it after it comes out of the oven? I don't know what it does, but it can't just be $99. You actually kind of have to try to get it there. That's number one.
Right.
Number two, I would have somebody full-time hired for your four locations in the main casinos that goes into TikTok and Instagram, uses the hashtag Las Vegas, sorts it by recent, sees who's just posted because it's proving that they're in Vegas, and DMing them to come to the place to get a free piece of the outlandish product. If you create the bait and then bring them in, and you're giving me and if you hit up D-Rock, because he somehow has a lot of followers, and we're in Vegas a lot for a speech, and you DM him and say, hey D-Rock, we love your work, we'd love you to come in and get a free $100 slice of pizza. There's two things that happen there. One, he'll probably do it because I know him. Two, the $100 will catch him off guard. Even if he wasn't gonna do it, that might make him do it. Like, you're like, what is that even? I do believe that would work. I really do. I think let me break it down one more time because I really want to make sure you get it because I'm gonna move on.
Yeah.
One to two ridiculous items. You're already aligned with me because you have a $100 burger. Mm-hmm. So you're already there. Mm-hmm. One to two items that are really outlandish, rethink them because the $100 burger potentially should be refurbished because you thought about it maybe with a different context point. You need to make it so visually interesting that when the influencer comes for the free thing, they're gonna wanna make, you're not gonna ask that. The second you say D-Rock, come and if you post on your Instagram, we'll give you a $100 burger, you're already dead.
Right.
If you just say, hey, we see that you're here, we love your stuff, come in, ask for Carl, the manager, and we'll give you the $100 milkshake. When that person gets the $100 milkshake, you know, you clearly want them to do the thing we want them to do. You have to make it so visually ridiculous that they themselves want to do it because it's good content. You need to hire a full-time person to constantly stay on TikTok and Instagram to see who's hashtag Vegas and DMing them. You need a full-time person.
Right.
Got it?
Yes.
Awesome.
Thank you, I appreciate it. Yeah, thanks.
Monique.
Oh, that's interesting. So one of my biggest challenges right now is we had in the sports and athletic space, where you have athletes who have gone to shows and they travel, and during the pandemic, that was all shut down. And I said, you know, we can really have our price point a lot higher if we're direct to consumer.
Yes.
But we're competing against the Fanatics, against
we talked about this.
Right?
Yes.
And so what is your thought in terms of the feasibility of something like that? for us to create our own like Legends or agency for direct to consumer merchandise
for other people besides Jim. I think it's real.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of fragmentation available in talent. Mm-hmm. It's why there's so many managers. It's why there's so many agencies. I think the feasibility is very real. I think the question you have to ask, and we obviously have a little bit of a preview of this because you and I spoke recently about this, it's going to come down to how good you are at it.
Yeah.
The problem with do I think that Jim and you and somebody you hire or somebody on the team reaches out to 12 Hall of Famers and say, are you really happy with the way you have it? We're starting this thing. Would you come? You know this better than I do. I'm just around it a lot. Legends trust other legends more than they trust somebody else trying to get in their pocket. So do I think you can get six people, Roger Staubach this, or Earl Campbell? Of course I do. I think you can. The problem is, and you also know this part, a year later, if they're selling less helmets with you, even if they're, if the money's not the same or better, then they're gonna start saying, wait, maybe I should go back to Upper Deck. Maybe I should go to Fidel. So I think the question there, the feasibility is incredibly real, very real. And forever real.
Yeah.
The question is, how much belief do you have that you can build the organization that can create that demand?
Yeah.
I'm not scared, about as much as I love Michael Rubin Fanatics, and I do, they're real homies. Do I think there's fragmentation? Of course I do, because it's happening. There's a lot of fragmentation. I think the question becomes, can you create the demand creation outside of, John Elway putting a link in his Instagram saying this is where my memorabilia is. You're gonna need more than that.
Much more than that.
So are you an organization? You become a retailer.
Right.
How good of a retailer are you?
Mm-hmm.
And that's right. I think the ideology always gets people going.
Right.
They're like,
right.
Yeah, we're gonna get 50% of the action instead of 20,
right.
But 50% of 17 signed balls
right.
is a lot less money than 20% of 20,000 balls.
Exactly.
And I think that's the thing you're gonna have to figure out.
That's right. And that's really where we are in terms of the feasibility of it.
I mean, the other thing is, look, for you specifically, your guy's situation, you're at such the tippy top of it that you could leave for a year, and if you decided, oops, we need to go back, every major player is gonna be very thrilled to have that convo with you.
Yeah.
So you gotta keep that in mind too.
Yeah. We wouldn't do it ourselves.
Yes.
We would definitely have a team. We build the team around it.
That's the decision you're making.
Yeah.
Do you believe that this team with better economics can close the gap on a team that's out there that's been doing it at the scale that whomever you're with?
Yeah.
I don't have that fully figured out.
And what's missing? Like, what is it that they're not doing?
Where's correct.
That differential?
That's right. And what can you add to it?
Right.
Access, virtual content, access,
definitely.
Content, all that stuff.
And the second
But let me say this, Monique, because I've seen a lot. Don't get over-romanced with the better percentages.
Right.
A lot of people lose on that game.
Absolutely.
Because in your specific thing, unlike other, it's one thing when you're, I'll tell you my story as a public speaker. When I looked at the data after 2 years with CAA, and at first it was great because actually, God rest his soul, when Tony Hsieh would say no and I was at CAA, they'd be like, how about this guy Gary Vaynerchuk? He talks about similar stuff. So that was great for me. But as my brand got to a different place, the last 2 years I was at CAA, 85% of my speaking engagements came through my website. Then you're like, well, I'm creating the demand.
Right.
So I think the demand creation is always gonna have the leverage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Not how good is the deal.
That's right.
Got
that's
it?
Right.
That's the key.
Absolutely.
And it's hard to compete for traffic.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like we have to cross promote amongst like the various projects that we have.
But the scale, scale in which, are we talking exclusive? And then you think about friction for the consumer.
Right.
Like if I'm looking for, I'm going to go to Google or I'm going to go directly to Fanatics, maybe Upper Deck and type in his name, eBay, right?
Yeah.
That'd be the other place I'd go. You got to think those things through.
Yeah. I definitely am beginning to feel that obviously Fanatics has a footprint that's way larger in this space, but there's so many other areas that they're not as big in.
I agree.
Certain types of apparel or even lacrosse as a growing sport. So kind of.
And Jim's, what I feel about his opportunity with lacrosse and telling that story. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You might be able to carve some stuff out too.
Exactly.
He's so revered.
Absolutely.
That I could see, I think some companies might even be willing to compromise and say, if you said, hey, we want to do all our own lacrosse stuff, can we have that exclusively? I think you might find some yeses because they might think it's too small and they have too much respect for him.
100%.
And then you could test.
Yeah.
Maybe you start there. I mean, he is the greatest lacrosse player of all time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm.
Awesome. Yeah, Gary, yeah. So I am working on my next startup, and I am thinking about kind of how do I help the masses, right? I've always built niche sites in investing, you know, dividends, mutual funds. So just talking to my daughter one day, she's 25, she's like, hey, you know, Dad, if it wasn't for you, me and my friends would never invest. Like, you know, you keep me up to date and whatnot. So I'm like, wow, that's like a big audience, mid-20s, not investing.
I mean, and now... Right. The whole Robin Hood phenomenon. I mean, you have more 20-year-olds. It's now it's like cool culture to be a trader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the thing. You know, everyone's into that, but the problem then is people get intimidated, right? So like my daughters aren't thinking about like, oh, you know, I'm going to trade crypto. I'm going to trade this, right? So my thing is I came up with this idea, the investing superstore. So when you think about a superstore, you think about Walmart, Target. You know, everything's there.
Superstore.
Superstore. Right.
Sorry, I heard superstars. The investment superstore. Keep going.
So the idea is to have any asset that you can buy in one location.
Okay.
So partnering up with a different sort of platform. So if you want to buy fractional shares of a rookie card, you want to buy stocks, you want to buy crypto, whatever the asset is, partner up with these companies and everything's done in one place. So the idea is...
Are you going to do that through APIs or are you going to be able...
So build like... The Amazon investing, you know, so like a discovery engine. So people that bought this asset also bought these assets.
Yep.
So the idea is to build the anti Robin Hood, right? Because Robin Hood is very gamified, it's trading. I want to build something that's more zen, right? I guess I've been in San Diego 5 years and it's rubbed off, right?
Yeah.
So I'm in this very like zen, no noise. I don't want any alerts from Wall Street, no upgrades, downgrades, earnings reports. I just want people to buy assets.
Well, won't that only work for people who are further along in their knowledge base? If you make a very zen place where I'm just transacting and nobody's bothering me, I love that, comma, won't I have to be pretty damn knowing what the fuck I want to buy when I go in there?
Yeah, well, there'll be an education part, right?
Okay.
So there's, you know, the education basics.
My hot take, and we've got more to go through, but my hot take is I've always historically struggled when somebody wants to be a consolidator of information coming from other sources because it's a dangerous business. Let me explain. It's very hard to win that game because first of all, it's hard to get people to come to a new place and that takes a lot of money. It's a theme. Mm-hmm. Two, if you're even able to succeed in that, which is a monumental win, when you're relying on APIs or other data sets, if you become too big, they shut it off, right? Because they don't want to pay you the VIG. So that's one thing to think through.
Yeah, well, like this, you know, the way I thought about it was like lead generation, right?
Yeah,
so we're
totally
sending them, you know, the
business. I have a good enough sense of like how you came up, so it makes sense to me.
So it's, you know, so it's lead generation. The flip side, you know, the other aspect that we thought originally was this Chrome extension, right?
Like you see, MetaMask.
Yeah, or even like, you know, Join Honey.
Yep.
Join Honey, people like, you know, they're in their cart, they're about to buy something. So even to create something where we can see what's in your cart and say, hey, there's 5 of the 12 things are investable.
I think the question becomes the following. So the hypothesis of everybody being an investor in their 20s is very real. Let's start there. The macro hypothesis, that is super real. The amount of content on TikTok right now, like of like actual investing advice that 16 and 17 year olds are taking very seriously between sneakers and sports cards and definitely NFTs and crypto and stock and Robinhood life and the whole GameStop stuff. It is, enough has happened that I would bet the farm on what's gonna happen with 20 year old behavior on investing. So that's great. Mm-hmm. The thing that you're thinking about, my first reaction on the next part is you're taking a very web 1.0 approach to it, consolidation, fragmentation, arbitrage. Mm-hmm. I do like the extension a little bit more. I think all of them are gonna do it. Coinbase, Robinhood, and these platforms have tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of users already, and they're gonna continue to verticalize and horizontalize offerings. So the superstore thing doesn't fire me up because I think that's the roadmap of all the people you're competing with mm-hmm. that have 100 million user head start and billions in fundraising head start.
Interesting. Yeah.
So that's one thing to just be open-eyed to.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
I don't think that's enough of a moat.
Yeah, well, the moat part that I was going to add in was the community part, right? So that now that we...
By the way, always.
Yeah, so like we own but, like the same asset, if we can create the communities in these...
But that's a chicken and egg thing, right? Like what size of scale does a community need to be a moat?
Yeah.
It needs to be pretty large, and like how do you get them there and why? It's why I'm so in love with content. I always think that content, at the end of the day, always is the lowest friction point to creating community. Yeah, I mean, I think the superstore thing is concerning just because I have a good enough read on what Robinhood and Coinbase and others, even the, like, everyone's battling for the same thing now.
Right.
The macro superstore thing scares me. The super macro hypothesis I'm in love with. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole, like, that, the way this started, like, hey, Dad, me and my friends are, like, that's huge because it's real.
Yeah.
I just wonder where you should put that energy.
Yeah. Yeah, the Investor Rest was like the brand that we had for the Chrome extension idea, right? Which is like, now you're in your car, it's like, hey.
Look, do I think that that can work as a Chrome extension? I really do.
Yeah.
Is that the is that the best use of a 4-year period to like build that up and the amount of dollars to like customer acquire is what I'm really thinking through. Because I love that you're on the macro. And sometimes, I've done this a lot. I've been so right about the macro, but where I put my energy was getting nickels instead of dollars against a very proper macro hypothesis.
Yeah.
Like if I was smart enough, that would be the word I would use, to realize what I was doing in 1996 with open cart optimization, because I knew I had a website and I knew that people were stuck and didn't check out, mainly because I used to be petrified of the tech, because I just always thought our site didn't work because it was so early and it was fucking very hard and I wasn't an engineer, and even though I hired engineers, like it was just like an everyday thing for me, is our site broken? Like it was just so early. That's why Web3 comes so natural to me. Everyone's all scared about NFTs. I'm like, this is 1996. Like nobody knows what the fucking a custodial wallet is. Of course people are getting, like it's a different shift. If I, instead of thinking about selling Pinot Noir for my dad, commercialized and productized open card optimization, I would have owned the Jets in 2002. That's kind of like a sense I'm getting here, which is like, I'm not scared of anything you said. I just love your macro thesis so much that I want to make sure you pressure test yourself on where you're going to deploy your attack on it.
Yeah.
You see where I'm going?
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I'm at.
I get that. I respect that. I can tell you one thing, and this is for all of you. Content while you're debating is a good idea.
Yeah.
You starting a TikTok and being aggressive about it on investing 101 advice from your perspective is a really good idea.
Yeah, it's funny. I like the part you said about sassing, right? Like
mm-hmm.
Because like I'm sort of like, I'm not a big fan of the things that happen like, you know, on CNBC, like, you know.
And I don't know if, do you have TikTok?
I don't.
Good, yeah. Let me tell you a theme in TikTok, a thing that's done in TikTok that will crush for you. You can green screen. It's a very common meme in TikTok where something's playing in the background and you're social commentating. Your ability to like, if you're not pumped with CNBC, film stuff, then talk over it while it's playing will work real well with the kids. Because CNBC is their dad's channel.
Right.
So you'll win them over real fast with that.
That's interesting, yeah, because I'm thinking about sort of the content angle.
And by the way, social commentating on top of a piece of content is the easiest way to create content.
Mm.
It's your hot take on what you see.
Can
yes, sir.
One last question.
Yes, of course.
David sucked up all my
Yeah, I know. He's good like that.
So you get the device.
Yes.
It's going to be ready May, June of next year. We have raised funds, so we have money to spend on marketing.
Yes.
If you're in our position where you've got a prototype device, that's what we have. We don't have a bunch of production devices to ship to influencers.
Yes.
Right now.
When will you?
Could be in the next 3 months, maybe within the next 3 months. So
that's not bad.
Our challenge right now is if we can launch in May, if you were us and we're launching in May, how would you drum up as much attention as you could now with, you know, we do have a considerable marketing budget.
Yeah, I'll give you a bunch of things. I think I got a lot for you. So one, I think you should really debate doing an NFT project. I really do. I think you should find an artist in Atlanta, maybe two. There's tons of good artists out there, that's not the issue. And literally design an NFT project. And everybody who buys an NFT gets the piece when it comes out. You're gonna have to decide what the price is so you can communicate. So that's over here, that's one thing to really debate. I know that's very progressive and early and I could kill that because it's so new. Number two, speaking to NFTs, I I don't know if you know what Discord is, but Discord and Facebook groups, I think a Facebook group around, literally the group's called Tired of Getting Your Car Fucked With group, you know?
It's funny, there's one in Kansas City, it's like 300,000 members in it.
It's just real.
We used a lot of it.
I love that. I think you should own the party instead of watching the party, so I think you should start your own Facebook groups, because that's gonna be your customers eventually. That's another thing. I think that you should make an animation kind of cartoon or stick figure. I think you should try to get the lowest cost 3 videos of reenacting how the product works for content now. Okay. Right? So think about how fun you can make some of that. If it's cartoon, if it's
a pretty cool cartoon explainer video right now.
Good.
That's actually working well.
Good. Send that over to me on email. It's Gary of VaynerMedia. I want to see it. I want you to make it not for the website to explain. I want you to make it for social media content demand creation. And I'm sure you can tell how that would be different. Yours is probably very literal. I want these to be a little more fun and just like cause virality. I would definitely, when we get closer, do some hardcore influencer TikTok work. The skits on TikTok with your product that can go crazy viral is pretty extreme. I mean, it's just made for comedy and made for TikTok, and I think you're one $3,000 influencer campaign away from having outrageous levels of awareness.
Would you start with 100 small influencers, or would you go after 2 or 3 big ones?
I mean, the answer is both can work. I think what I'd probably do right away is make sure both of you actually get serious about downloading TikTok and just like spending 15 minutes a day like using it so that you are a better judge and jury of who you do something with. The biggest issue for everybody.
Please. So I'm in. My daughter will be excited about that.
Yes. She'll be devastated.
Yeah,
exactly.
How are you doing? So if I did that, how would I best do research?
You'll love this. Not your category. I just want you to have the tone and temperament of TikTok. There's probably not a whole lot of Carl Alarm, car stealing content. What I want you to do, back to where your partner in crime here, he referenced basketball and has a basketball shirt on, good. Let him fucking like have his stream filled with that basketball content. I just want both of you to have a taste of the temperament. You're not gonna find content around you. What you're gonna find probably along the way, my dream is on March 9th, you're staying the course. 10 minutes a day, you're just going through and you're like enjoying it as a human. You find something that really makes you laugh. You click on the person, they've got 87,000 followers. You look at their other 6 videos, you're like, this person's fucking good. This is me dreaming. Oh shit, this person lives in Alabama, not too far. You message the person, go, I love your stuff. Would you consider doing something for a brand? You see where I'm going? That's like my dream state. It doesn't have to be that lucky. It could be something else. But at some point based on your timing, in April or May, I'm gonna want you to spend 10,000 bucks on 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 influencer campaigns. And I want you to be dramatically, back to PR, back to the lovely gentleman to the left. People waste money when they don't know how to judge it. The amount of people that have wasted a fortune on, almost everybody who tells me that social media doesn't work, I already know exactly what happened. Mm. They wanted to try it out because they were scared to waste money. They went with someone that's bullshit, either completely full of shit or just is shit, and they don't even realize it because it's small. They do their thing, it doesn't work, and they decide after 3 months of fucking putting 2,000 bucks a month into some horse shit that doesn't work. That's like me going outside right now and dribbling a basketball, not being good at it and saying that basketball isn't a viable option. You have to be good at it.
Yeah.
So you need to know, you understand why I brought up TikTok so much. From 2011 to 2013, if you were the best in the world at running Facebook ads, you built a huge company. In 2015 to 2017, if you were the best at the world of being an influencer on Instagram, you really built something big. We are in it right now, and we've probably got another 12 to 24 months where you're just getting better deals from TikTok than TikTok is getting from you, and then they tip. Right now, everyone on Instagram that's one-dimensional Instagram is crying. Their organic reach is down. It's harder. They're not growing as fast. They're not making as much money. They're mad at the algorithm. Fucking Instagram. Meanwhile, Instagram doesn't charge you anything, and you built your whole career on it. You just had good timing, and you got it when it was good. TikTok's got that right now, and I just need everybody to go hard at it because it will go away.
Yeah.
Just like Instagram went away, just like Twitter went away, just like Facebook went away.
Yeah.
It's the same game every time. Yeah. It's the real estate version of attention. You either buy beachfront property first or you don't.
Yeah.
And it gets progressively worse deal.
And TikTok is where all the cranes is. That's what you're saying.
That's exactly right. It's just where the attention is.
Yeah.
And it's not 15-year-olds anymore.
Yeah.
It's 30, 40. Like it's this is a rodeo I've seen before.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So what I love about your product for TikTok, unlike Instagram perfect marketing 4 years ago where it was like just a nice image of your product with a little click here and you go to your website and you convert and you cookie them and you retarget them. Now with iOS 14 update, you can't retarget the same way. But on TikTok for your product, one aspiring comedian does the right hilarious video of somebody scared shitless of trying to steal the car and it gets 14 million organic views, you're off to the races.
That's all we got for you,
man. Thank you so much. Such a pleasure. Good to see you again.
It's great to be back.
Thanks for being here. Yeah, it really is good to be back in person. Like, really good. The Zoom version of this is just not as fun. I love it. It's efficient.
Cut that one out, because I still need to sell this.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks, gang.
Nice to meet you.